Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, thanks for downloading this podcast. If you want to listen live, be sure to download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Stop being stupid, people.
All bets are off.
You all suck.
I'm Morenci Unfiltered.
Scumbags!
Get on the grid, Sports Grid, Morenci Unfiltered. The podcast begins now. Let's do this thing. I am Cable Morenci. It's Wednesday, which has turned into our weekly Last Dance recap and review. But unfortunately, almost tearfully so, much like the Chicago Bulls being the last dance, this is the last dance of recapping the epic documentary series. Although I don't know if documentary is the right word for it. Great film, you know, whatever you want to call it. The ratings were higher than ESPN would have even imagined. They average over 5 million viewers per episode. A couple episodes got into the 6 million viewers mode. And, you know, it's funny. A lot of people were like, well, it's too long. You don't need to drag it out this long. And anybody that watched this thing and that was into it said to themselves after, well, when's episode 11 and 12 on? Like, you know, the story's not done. And you know that there's a ton of stuff on the cutting room floor as well. And there's been quite a fallout. You know, no one ever would have imagined just like what this documentary would have turned into as far as former players, bringing up the Pistons and the handshake and Gary Payton and Patrick Ewing. So many players were just brought, you know, back from blast from the past, so to speak. But Pete Yiannopoulos steps up and in right now, RDS Television, to break it down with us. And Pete, even though the series is done, you're saying it's not done. It's opened up a whole new Pandora's box. Horace Grant basically is willing to fight Michael Jordan right now. Craig Hodges is pissed. There are a lot of people that are saying, you know what? I didn't even, you know, I said a lot of other things that got cut out of the show. So in other words, they did a great job with it because people are talking about it still.
No question about it, Gabe. And again, the expectations were so high when they first came out with the commercial that this will be coming out, The Last Dance, over a year ago. And we couldn't wait. And thank God they fast-forward it right now. And I think that when you look at a documentary or a film or whatever you want to call it, it got people talking. And for sports people, this was popcorn for us, a little dessert as well. But for people who are not into sports, this is must-see to see the greatest athlete to ever play any sport, the most dominant competitor, winner, cutthroat, and like Reggie Miller called him, Black Jesus, or Jordan called himself the Black Jesus. Don't ever trash talk Black Jesus. And Reggie Miller, never forget that. It was just incredible. It was, you know what, the first two episodes were really good. I think 3 and 4 were okay, and I was like, I want to see more. And then when we got to 9 and 10, man, I had shivers. I had some tears. I had some laughs. It ended just spectacularly. It was so well done. Again, Michael Jordan, I don't think this was the Chicago Bulls 97-98 last dance. It was the journey of Michael Jordan and his Chicago Bulls teammates and what he did to them. But I don't care. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, it got deep. It did get deep at the end. And, you know, some people would say, you know, you know they wanted more of that, so to speak. Yeah, Jordan, you know, this is almost as open as he's really been before. And, you know, there was only so much time that they had with him and you know, in the series itself. I would have liked to just sort of, you know, like, you know, Craig Hodges wasn't in it, right? So it's something that he's not very, you know, I brought this up earlier. I don't know if he's not happy he's in it, but it's funny, Pete, if you think about this, Craig Hodges took offense to the whole cocaine circus thing. And the thing is, Jordan never named him by name. So Craig Hodges, like the Monday morning after the episode comes out and starts bitching about, you know, it's unbelievable. You know, I'm not a cokehead.
It's like, bro, he never named you by name. You just outed yourself. You know what I'm saying? It's like, all he said is there was a bunch of guys. He never named names, right? He said there were a bunch of guys, and Craig Hodges is like, oh, now I got to, like, you know, deny that I was doing cocaine, which I thought that was kind of funny. But Horace Grant, and there's so many places we can go with this, so I'll just sort of, you know, whatever pops up. So Horace Grant, and you remember last week I told you this, actually. I said, you know, what stuck out to me is here, Horace Grant's like the only guy sort of almost ever, like besides the Pistons when Jordan was younger, but that really didn't bow down to Jordan. Jordan tried to break his will and sort of conform him, and he couldn't. He didn't. Then he goes to Orlando and beats him, right? On the road, too, right? Like, and you see him walking off the court. Like, I told you last week, Pete, like, there's not a lot of people that, like, had that moment. It's one thing, like B.J. Armstrong said, yeah, everyone has their moment. And, you know, he hit a bunch of shots and they won a game, but they got smoked in the series after. But Horace Grant actually had that moment where he dunked on him, they stole the ball from him, and they beat him.
You're so right, Gabe. When you think about, not many people have challenged Michael Jordan and have won. When you look at all the greats, and this is what I take back from this Last Dance documentary, is all the great players like Charles Barkley, Patrick Ewing, Reggie Miller, Gary Payton, Sean Kemp, all these guys didn't get a ring because they had to go through Michael Jordan. They couldn't beat him. Now, I'm not putting Horace Grant in this type of pantheon, but you look at Horace Grant, left the Bulls, he was upset, he took the money, but he beat Jordan on his home court, on his floor, and then celebrated like a football coach after a big win, right? Let's get him on his shoulders.
Yeah.
6 foot 10, 240 pounds, Horace Grant. It was like they were picking up Bill Parcells or something.
Hey, it did go to the finals too, right? So he had a nice little run himself. He didn't win again the rig after. But, you know, and even now, and, you know, something stuck out to me. All those great players, they all sort of, you know, and – well, what are you going to do? It's Michael Jordan. You heard Jalen Rose. You know, there was 0.11 second left, but, you know, the building's going crazy. But he goes, I looked over and I saw Michael Jordan and I said, man, we're kind of screwed. Like, it's a lot like Tiger Woods, where these guys defeated themselves a lot, Pete. You know what I mean? Like, Jordan was great, but people would wilt around him. It's like the same way when Tiger Woods was dominating. Guys would start missing shots and stuff because they get nervous. And they know they sort of have to be perfect. You and I talked about it, like the missed free throws. But, you know, Karl Malone, like bad, you know, a pass here, a play there. Anyone that sees the highlights, every one of these damn games are like one-point games all the time, coming right down to the end. And people just couldn't close it like Michael could. But it's amazing, like, you know, people sort of either, you know, fought back with him, and but always were part of his plan. You see now, even from his comments this week, he's like, if Jordan really thinks I'm a snitch, then he better say it to my face when I see him. And he says, I hope things are cordial, but if they're not, then so be it. I don't care anymore. Right? So
yeah, let's settle this
even
like
now.
Men.
Yeah, even now, Horace Grant's not bowing to the airness, so to speak.
Oh, you're right. And listen, at the end of the day, this was Michael Jordan's documentary. It was his film. There's a lot of things that were probably edited and cut out. There's some guys that weren't even allowed to speak. When I think of Craig Hodges being one, we didn't get to really hear of Bill Cartwright, except for the fact that when Scottie Pippen decided not to go into the court for the last shot until Jackson leveraged Tony Kukoc, instead Bill Cartwright was the guy that went up to Scottie Pippen. When I think
there was Robert Parrish story about in practice once, when Jordan got in his face and Parrish said, these guys might be scared of you, but I'll kick your ass. He said, Jordan never talked to him again. He said, Jordan didn't like him, right? Jordan just didn't like him when he showed up. He was a Celtic and whatever. He just didn't like him. And Jordan chirped him a couple of times in practice. I know you know the story, but Jordan chirped him a couple of times in practice. It was like a bad pass or something. Jordan got in his face. And, like, physically sort of, like, started talking shit to him. And Robert Parrish's exact words were, I'm not quite as enamored as everybody else is here with you. And he said, you know, he goes, I've won, too. Huh? He goes, I've got some rings as well. And Jordan said, I'm going to kick your effing ass. And Robert Parrish told him, you really won't. And I wouldn't try. And Jordan he said Jordan never even basically looked at him for the rest of the year again.
Yeah, they didn't even shake hands when they won the title.
They call him Chief for nothing, right?
Oh, he's the Chief. Some of those guys that, you know, when you look at Jerry Cross and the way he had to construct the team salary-wise, you had, you know, Jordan making the big bucks and then, you know, Robin or Grant. And then you had those guys at the end of the bench, the Jug Butchlers, Joe Klein, Robert Parrish, Randy Brown. It was nice to see those guys again. And, hey, they were along with the ride, you know, winning 6 championships, 2 three-peats. The one thing when I'm looking back at this, Gabe, and I think that you would agree with me, when we're going to rewatch this for a second time, we're going to appreciate it even more because we're going to get to hear things or see things a little bit more that we didn't really quite get the first time because we were just so excited with all this information that was coming to us. But the one thing that stuck out to me now is how Scottie Pippen, who was arguably the best second player to a superstar in the history of the NBA and probably could have been a number one guy, Scottie Pippen hasn't been portrayed in this Last Dance as the great player that he was. You know, there was a focus on him, you know, getting the migraine and not performing against the Pistons. There was a big focus of him quitting on his team and Kukoc and not being there and when he got hurt.
And like, even Jordan dropping it, even now in his most recent interview when he goes, that'll stick with him for till his grave type thing. Like, Jordan's implying that he, you know, and Horace Grant brought a great point up about that, actually, though, Pete. You know, this is only Horace that'll do this. Horace said, I don't like the way Pippen was portrayed. He said that, right? He said, man, Pippen could barely walk, man, when he played that game 6 in the finals. They said, without him, we were screwed. They said he was one of the toughest guys, and he basically blamed Jordan. He said, why'd they even bring that up? And they said, why'd they even bring that 1.8 stuff up? And Horace had the best point. He said, Jordan wasn't even on the effing team. That's true. Like Horace Grant. Like, only Horace has the balls to say, it's none of your business, bro. Like, that's what he said. He goes, I don't even know why he brought that up on the thing. He goes, Jordan, Michael, like, basically said, Michael quit on us. Like, he wasn't there. Like, you know, like, Horace, like, really is, like, upset about this, the way everything was portrayed. He also says that, you know, he had a lot of stuff that they cut out that he said.
Well, listen, at the end of the day, you know, you saw Pippen. I think at one time, I believe Pippen mentioned that he thought LeBron James was the best player ever. And I think he kind of retracted that and said Michael's the best guy afterwards. But, like, as we saw in this documentary, Jordan has a long memory. And if you slight him in any sort of way, he's going to come after you and he's going to go for the jugular and he's a killer. Sometimes he would make things up, which was funny as well with the LeBradford Smith comment. Good game, Mike. But again, listen, Michael Jordan, we saw here that he overcame so much adversity with the off-court distractions. And then when it came time to win, he was the guy that got the job done. And I think that when you look at sports, and we could dissect all we want, Gabe Morenci, sports is ultimately about winning. And the Chicago Bulls won. They won 6 championships in 8 years. And 2 of those years, or 1.5, Jordan was retired. So you could take all the statistics you want, and you could break down how great LeBron is and, you know, how great Harden is. You know, take those statistics and go make a suit, man. Sports is about winning, and the Bulls won.
Yeah, and he doesn't apologize for it, right? As we saw at the end of one of the episodes. Now, he did start to tear up a little bit, and he said winning has its price, but it's a good point that you raise. Forget about, like, you know, just any athlete being that successful that consistently. But as you see in the documentary, what his days were actually like, right? Like, he never, you know what I mean? He didn't have a lot of spare time and minutes. Like, everything after it was, all right, meet this kid, do this, shoot that commercial, do that, do this, play golf, back to basketball. Like, he was so busy all the time, and yet he delivered. You know, as you stated, a lot of people get distracted by the superstardom after that. He did do a great job of staying uber-focused. Now, as far as Scottie Pippen is concerned, Pippen almost seems confused now, right? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, he... when he said, well, I knew it was wrong what I did, but I would do it again. Right? And,
you're and, right, man.
Yeah, and he goes, yeah, I was wrong. Like, he seems confused off. Like, he's still torn almost. Like, he's not really sure. And I thought it was interesting out of everything, and you saw the Jerry Krause stuff. And one thing, you know, Jerry's not here, man. He wasn't there. He never did an interview, right? He wasn't there to speak his piece. And the book, he was writing a book and it was never published. And his family has started to publish excerpts of it to sort of get his side of the story out there. But it did surprise me at the end when Scottie Pippen said, and it was right near the end of the episode, like you said, I was about to bust up. And he said, man, he said, I played on one of the greatest teams of all time with the greatest player of all time with the greatest coach of all time. And then he sort of paused and he said, with the greatest general manager of all time. That's not, you know, that's pretty big right there. Like, Jerry's dead right now, but wherever he is, if he heard that, that's almost like a sorry for, you know what I mean? That, to me, that's the way I took it. Like, no, for Scotty to say that, he didn't have to drop that. Like, and no one would have even batted an eyelash. But he said, and you know what? Did the best general manager ever. Pretty deep stuff when he dropped that.
Oh, you're right, Gabe. It's a great point you just made because, as we saw at the beginning of the documentary and throughout, you know, it was this criticism of Jerry Krause as the guy who destroyed this dynasty. But people don't give him enough credit that he's the one who created this dynasty. And he didn't create it with just paying players as free agents. They drafted and they cultivated and developed these players. Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Horace Grant. I mean, this is unbelievable what Jerry Krause did. And if you think of
bringing in Tony Kukoc after.
Exactly. Like Tony was unbelievable when they won the three consecutive championships. People don't understand that he was the sixth man right at first, but then he ended up starting. And he alleviated so much pressure off Jordan and Pippen to score. And if you look at the percentages, they weren't really the greatest percentages when they were shooting the basketball, Jordan and Scottie Pippen. Tony brought that. And Phil Jackson absolutely consolidated and leveraged Tony Kukoc the right way when Jordan played or he didn't play. Hey, here's a 6'11" guy that could shoot over anybody, and he's proven that he can make big shots. So I think that when you look at some of the great general managers of our time, you know, R.C. Buford, obviously most recently with the Spurs, you know, you look at, you know, Pat Riley was a coach, then he's been a GM and president with the Heat. But listen, when I think of, you know, who was the orchestrator of the greatest franchise of all time, to me, it's Jerry Krause. And the one thing that Jordan will never admit, I'll tell you this right now, you know, he's an owner of the Charlotte Hornets. He could use a Jerry Krause to be a general manager. And let me tell you, the Hornets would be a better team with him.
Yeah, Jerry Krause wouldn't have given Terry Rozier a max contract, I'll tell you that much.
Right? Or Nicholas Batum at $85 million, right?
And it's crazy because you see Jordan after all these years, he won't talk to Barkley. Because Barkley said, listen, man, Charlotte's a mess. And now he gets cut out. And Horace Grant brought that up. He goes, look it. He goes, he was friends with Barkley for 30 years, man. He goes, cuts him out of his life because he said something that's true about the Hornets sucking. Right? Like, you know, Horace is really telling it like it is, but there's more stuff we'll get into here. Like you said, it's just, it unlayered so much. And even from a personal journey, Pete, we'll get into this. Going down that, you know, just thinking where I was in my life. And I was like, man, I remember that day. I remember that night. I remember that year. Crazy, crazy ride. Last Dance continues.
Are you ready for the nation's first and only free 24-hour network dedicated to you, the betting and fantasy sports enthusiast? Sports Grid will provide you with real-time content, statistics, and gaming intelligence unlike anything you've ever seen before. Located both in the heart of New York City and inside the FanDuel Sportsbook at the Meadowlands, Sports Grid is live 18 hours a day, here to serve you, the fanatic. This is Sports Grid. Get on the grid.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Filter continues. We'll break it down to Last Dance and the Chicago Bulls. We'll get to the modern NBA as well a little bit. But the part that got to me where it got deep, like you said, they really raised it up a notch. Like, it ended strong. You know what I mean? It ended strong. The Steve Kerr story. And it's always amazing to me. I just sort of assume that people know things. And I'm seeing on Twitter on Sunday night, people are like, what? I had no idea this guy. Oh, his parents got like, I'm like, come on, guys. Like, really? Like, what, you just think that he just appeared and coached the Golden State Warriors and his life's great and it's so easy for him, right? Like, people just don't realize where these guys come from and you know, what they did to get there. But Steve Kerr's journey and, of course, his personal journey, and if you're younger, you don't know, but his father was murdered. He was a professor in Lebanon, and he was murdered by terrorists, and... You know, it was real devastating for him. And Arizona State fans mock it. And, you know, he goes on to make it to the NBA and everything. But, you know, we can go through the Steve Kerr story. But the part that nearly really got me, I had a hard time not choking up. It started to get to me was when they won after. So they win again. It's over. The Last Dance was real. Right? And there was people thinking, you know, and there was even a Hail Mary to try to save it and stuff behind the scenes. And Phil Jackson was like, no, man, like, they told me if I go 82-0, I'm not back anyways. And he said, it was the Last Dance, guys. And he summoned the team. They already had the parade. Everyone partied their ass off, so people were sobered up. And he called them in for one last meeting, Pete. And you know the part. And Kerr, he said, Phil Jackson told him to write down on a piece of paper what it meant to them to be part of that that run and to be part of the team and what it meant for them in their lives. And everybody wrote something, and Jordan wrote a poem even. They said Jordan didn't get deep like that often, but Jordan even wrote a poem. And they all read the letters. They put it in the fire, and they turned the lights out, and they burned the letters. And then they basically walked out, and some of them have never seen each other ever again. That's the part that nearly got me, Pete.
No, it did. It did for myself as well.
And even Kerr said it too, Pete, right? And Kerr's been through a lot. He said, man, that's what it got to me when Steve Kerr stopped. And Kerr was sort of tearing up. And Kerr said it was one of the most deepest, what'd he say? It was one of the most intense things I've ever been a part of in my life, being in that room when they were burning the letters.
I mean, and that's a testament to Phil Jackson and how he's able to unify teams and groups and organizations. And he, you know, he's going to go down as probably the greatest coach of all time, and deservedly so. I think he got a little bit of a free pass just because he was part of the reason why the dynasty was broken up. Yes, Reinsdorf, I think, deserves the blame first. I think Cross as the GM second, but Jackson had a big ego as well, and he didn't work well with Jerry Cross as well. But when you think about Steve Kerr, and I remember his father being assassinated, I remember Steve Kerr talking about it in Arizona, and to bring it back, it brought back memories when I was a kid trying to look at some, you know, the sporting news, or starting to listen to CNN a little bit, and they'll give you a little update on what was going on in college basketball. But Kerr, you know, his father was assassinated, and one of the part that got to me as well is that Steve and Michael Jordan, they had a similar path in the sense that both their fathers were assassinated and murdered. And they never spoke about that to each other because it was too hard and too emotional and too deep. And that's when Kerr started getting teared eyes. And then the last meeting and putting in and hearing that Michael Jordan, after everything that he put the team through, a lot of positive, but a lot of negative as well. He wasn't really a great guy or a teammate to be around. For him to open up that way and show his emotions, I think it was touching. And it just showed that, you know, sports is about a group. It's about a team. It's about going through ups and downs, whether it's Little League or whether it's the greatest dynasty of all time. It's the same type of emotions that you get with coaches and with players. I love the fact In game five, when they were about to clinch, they're up 3-1, and Jordan is playing with his Air Jordans underneath his sole, and Tex Winter goes up to Jordan. Hey, Mike, is your shoe okay? You're not going to be sliding around all game tonight?
Yeah, yeah. He goes, I'm going to slide a ring on your finger tonight.
Yeah. Like, I just started bursting laughing when I heard that, because that's the stuff that we love. That's what we want to hear.
He said, don't worry, Tex. I'm about to slide a ring on your finger tonight.
All right, Tex, you got that? Good.
And then Tex, he did it, though. They lost. Jordan was pissed after. That's really been part of the story, right? That's why they showed it.
They had to go back to Utah.
Yeah, they had to go back to Utah. And then Jordan, and you know what? It wasn't just like BS either, or, you know, bullshit I could say on the podcast. When Jordan said, he told them, well, we lost. He says, we're going back to Utah. Remember, they hated Utah too. Hey, they hated going there. Like, he's like, well, we lost. We're going back to Utah. And he goes, and I don't know about you guys, but he goes, I ain't staying there. And he goes, I'm bringing one suit. And you see him getting off the plane. No bag, no nothing. Jordan literally is wearing one suit, showed up. I love to. And after the game, they win. And you know how cool. That's, I was like, damn, man, this guy's hardcore. Like, so he's like, I'm bringing nothing. You know, like, come on, man. LeBron James would have, like, LeBron James probably has his own plane just for his clothes. And you know what I mean? What am I going to wear tonight? I'm going to win the championship. Like, Jordan's like, I'm wearing one suit. And after the game, it stuck out to me when they showed him go back to the hotel when they won. He's still in his uniform. He meant it. He literally meant it. Like, they flew back to Chicago in, like, a championship T-shirt type thing. Like, he really did not bring any clothes to Utah with him. So the real question is about Utah is the pizza story. And I don't know. You know, was it food poisoning? Did he have the flu? Was he drinking? Was he, you know what I mean? Was it a combination of all? But for the record, the pizza guy did an interview in Salt Lake City this week. And he said that it's not true. Like, he's, you know, he's upset. You know, the way that he's portrayed. No one knew who it was until now, him. But it turns out, Pete, he's a Bulls fan. So for people tuning in, if you don't know the story, the guy's name is Craig Fite. At the time, he still lives in Utah, but at the time, he was the assistant manager of the local Pizza Hut in Park City, Utah, 30 minutes outside of Salt Lake City. And the Bulls were staying there. They were staying at the Marriott in Park City. They weren't in Salt Lake City. And he said everyone in the food industry knew that the Bulls were staying there, obviously. It's a small town, obviously. All right, so they all know, all right, the Bulls are there. So he said they get a call late before they close, and it's for the hotel where, and basically they got excited at the pizza place. They're like, oh, my God, we think this is actually for the Chicago Bulls. And is it for Jordan? And, you know, they're sort of talking at the restaurant. But what's interesting, Pete, he's a Bulls fan. He's a Bulls fan. So he told the guy on the interview on the radio in Salt Lake City, he said, you know, I was actually a big Bulls fan, and I didn't trust anyone else in around. And he said, I personally made the pizza. And he said, they're lying. He goes, we didn't show up with five guys. He said it was me and the driver. And he said, I asked them if I could say hi to Michael Jordan. He told him, I'm a big Bulls fan. Can I say hi to Michael Jordan? And they said, yeah, sure. Like, Jordan, they opened the door. Jordan waved at him. And he was like, oh, my God, it's true. I used to deliver the pizza to Michael Jordan. But he says that he loved Jordan. He loved the Bulls. He made the pizza himself. And he said he was the assistant general manager. And he wouldn't have went. But he didn't trust his coworkers, actually, not to mess with the pizza.
You see that?
Yeah. So it's an interesting story. And you sort of chuckle when I said, I don't know, man. Maybe he was hungover a lot, because there's even a clip in the series. Like you said, if you pick up little things, they said, what'd you do last night in your hotel room? He said, ah, man, I drank and I played piano. You know, like
during the final.
Yeah. And you exactly. Imagine now. Like, Jordan, exactly. He's getting drunk in his room playing the piano. And you notice, like, when he said, like, early in his career, oh, I didn't drink back then. But I noticed that a lot, Pete, on the plane, hotel room, there was always booze around, bro. Like, Jordan drank more than people realized.
Oh, he did. There's no question about it. And listen, it would have been nice if they interviewed somebody from Utah, that pizza place, in the documentary, and they could say, yeah, yeah, this is what we did. But obviously they didn't. It was only his personal trainer and his best friend that was showcased a lot in this documentary. That was something new. But when I look at, you know, that game, obviously the flu game, you know, there was so much sweat pouring down his head throughout the game. I mean, we've had a couple of those days the day after.
Yeah, I know.
But anyway, when I think about it, and there was some great, great rivalries, right? Like Malone and Rodman. I would have liked if they focused on that a little bit more, because they went after each other.
Remember that clip? They showed the clip when they tripped each other. Like, dude, what was great about that? It went all the way down to court. Like, it happened under the basket. They sort of got up, and it was like, all right, they collided under the basket. Malone got up and tried to run away. Rodman trips him. Rodman's like sort of jogging past him. Malone takes him down, tackles him, and the refs just let it go. And these guys literally like rolled, tripped, and like tackled each other to half court. Then both got up, and you saw Rodman slaps him on the ass. Malone smacks him harder.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, Malone was the MVP of the league. You know, he was the most dominated player in power.
Pissed Jordan off. It would have been better if they didn't.
And Rodman, we know what he was defensively and how he could rebound the basketball. I think of the Utah Jazz, and at that time, Gabe, at that time in 97 and 98, I wanted the Utah Jazz to win because I didn't grow up a Bulls fan. Like, I grew up a Laker fan. Magic Johnson was my guy. I loved Jordan, and I wanted to be like him as a young kid. But, I wanted the upset. I wanted Utah to dethrone them. And they had the lead in so many games, Gabe. Late in the game, they had the lead, and they couldn't close. And Karl Malone couldn't close. And I love Stockton, what he said. I wasn't, you know, in awe of Michael Jordan or afraid of the Bulls. Like, I just went after it. And I like that Stockton took the three at the end, really, to win the game. And it was so close, because if he missed that,
it was
game seven.
It was in and out. It was like, when it went up, I'm like, Dad, I even remember when it went up, like, people don't realize that. They probably would, and they could have won game seven. It never got there. Everyone always missed the shot. Something always would happen. Like you said, too, who made the pass that you took the shot? You talked about it. They were up by four, and they had the possession, and the Buddy made a bad shot with 40 seconds left, and Jordan laid it in after. Was it Howard Isley? Who was it? Someone took a bad shot. It was Howard Isley. He could have hung on, milked the clock. There was 40 seconds. They're up by four. He rushes a shot, misses. Jordan, like, sprints down the court, lays it in. Boom, down by two. Rest is history.
And then how about the possession after? Stockton goes to Malone on the left block, right? We all know it. We've seen it. And Jordan doesn't clear, and Malone doesn't see him. Jordan gets the steal and the clean steal. You know how hard it is to get the ball out of Karl Malone's hand? But he gets the steal. No timeout by Phil Jackson. Smart move. Goes against the defense, and then there's Russell, and in 97, they double-teamed Jordan, and that's why he passed it to Kerr. They didn't double-team Jordan there, and he wasn't going to pass. And that's the one thing I want to tell people, because a lot of people are like, oh, you all criticize LeBron James because he always passes the shot, he never takes the shot, but Jordan passed to Kerr, Jordan passed to Paxson. No, Horace Grant passed it to Paxson because he got double-teamed at half court. On the last play to Kerr in 97, the Bulls, the game was tied, and they were up 3-2. Here in 98, they were down by one. Jordan's not passing the ball. He knew what he was going to do, and he got the jump shot over Brian Russell. And then how about them complaining that he didn't push off? No, his momentum was going there. That was the foul. But how about Dennis Rodman, Gabe, leaving and going to Nitro?
Yeah, imagine that happened now.
And Hulk Hogan. Can you imagine that happening today?
You know, the thing that stuck out to me about Rodman was how quiet he is actually in the room and stuff. In real life, he's quiet. He's an entertainer. But only when the mic is on. You saw, like, on the plane, he was sleeping in the room. He never really said anything to anybody. He just sort of minded his own business. But he was developing into that character. It's a great point that you raised, though. He didn't pass it to Paxson. Horace Grant did. Like, you're exactly right. And if it didn't go in, you know, Jordan would have been pissed that he didn't get the shot. And the Kerr thing was different. You know, they were up, as you stated, they were up. It was at the free throw line. It was just a different sequence of scenario. And it wasn't at the buzzer. It wasn't at the end of the game, Pete. Right? Like, there was, you know, there was another possession left and everything. They scored another basket after with the steal. It wasn't like really, Kerr hit the last shot. It's sort of like hitting, you know, scoring a game-winning goal, but the team won 4-1. But yeah, you scored when it made it 2-1. You know what I mean? In hockey, you know, it's like one of those. I give credit to Kerr. He hit the shot. And I love that Rodman said, and when they were in Utah, he even brought up what you just sort of said. He goes, man, he goes, Paxton hit a shot. He goes, Kerr had a big shot. He goes, I knew there was no way in hell he was passing the ball. Like, Rodman said, I just stood there because I knew. And he goes, it crossed my mind. I was like, that's Michael Jordan. He's not passing the ball right now. Like, this is his moment. Like, and everyone just sort of stood and was like, all right, do your thing. And yeah, he had that little push off. And one thing too, people actually were like, oh, you know, Carl, because Carl Malone refused to be interviewed for this. And people were like, oh, you know, that's Bush League. You should have done it. Why? Guy lost two titles to this guy. And you saw his classiness. He went on the freaking bus after. He went on the Bulls bus and congratulated the team, man to man. He said, good job, guys. He shook Jordan's hand. He was on the bus. Like, that's as good as, you know, there's so much. You know, we got to go to break in a second. I want to get to LeBron on the next last segment here. But, you know, the Larry Bird stuff was great. When they beat the Pacers in game 7 and they're in the hallway after. Yeah. And Jordan's there. And, like, Larry Bird's like one of the, like, you can count people like on one hand, the amount of people Jordan respect. Larry Bird is one of them. So he respects Bird, and Bird's there. And he's like, well, at least you can go work on your golf game now, man. You know, Jordan says to Bird after they win, at least you can go work on your terrible golf game. Larry Bird just goes, F off. he goes, good luck, F off. Hugs him, smiles, walks away. Short but sweet, get on the grid.
Are you ready for the nation's first and only free 24-hour network dedicated to you, the betting and fantasy sports enthusiast? Sports Grid will provide you with real-time content, statistics, and gaming intelligence unlike anything you've ever seen before. Located both in the heart of New York City and inside the FanDuel Sportsbook at the Meadowlands, Sports Grid is live 18 hours a day, here to serve you, the fanatic. This is Sports Grid. Get on the grid.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Berenzi Unfiltered, the podcast continues. It's been so much fun talking basketball with Pete Annapolis, breaking down the last dance and going down memory lane. It's amazing. You figure, oh, you guys in a podcast, you get to everything. And I don't think I'm going to even be able to get everything that's on my mind right now as it is. But let's get to the pressing question right now. For the record, Reinsdorf said this week, he said, you know, all you people talking about winning again, he said it wouldn't have happened. And he's adamant about it. He goes, it wouldn't have happened. We were at the end. And he said all those other role guys, they weren't, you know, he went on about not paying them. And he also brought up about how Jordan cut his finger on a cigar cutter and how he needed surgery and stuff. And he brought up, because Jordan wouldn't have been able to play because he would have cut his finger. But I don't know about that, only because if Jordan was playing, it would have taken changing the sequence of life, like Star Trek. Like, he wouldn't have been in the same place as he was, etc. But nevertheless, but that was the gist of it at the end. That Jordan said, you know, it bothers him. You figure a guy that has accomplished everything and he's at peace, but you could tell it bothered him. He said, you know, we could have won more. Said, I don't know if we would have won, but maybe we would have got to 7 or 8. And that's the question. The next year was a young Tim Duncan and a David Robinson, not quite in his prime, I guess a little past his prime, or you want to call it his prime then, I guess. I guess it's his prime.
Right.
Yeah. It wasn't Ginobili and Parker yet, guys. Exactly. Mario Elie, Antonio Daniels.
Sean Elliott.
I don't know, man. I don't think those guys would have been intimidated by the Bulls.
And here's the thing.
They were better. You brought it up, Pete. They weren't good with big men, the Bulls, and you had Duncan and Robinson. It would have been a matchup problem for them, a big one.
They would have had problems there, but here's the thing, because at first you're like 99. Would they be able to go through another regular season, another playoff run?
Yeah, but it was the shortened season, right?
And guess who came out in 99 out of the East?
The Knicks.
The 8-seed New York Knicks. They upset Miami. Remember with the Allen Houston shot?
Yeah.
The Hardaway Morning were out. And then the Knicks beat the Pacers. So you would think that they would make the finals. And again, there's one thing I learned in life. You never bet against Michael Jordan. It's a cliche, and probably I wouldn't. But they always had problems against big guys. And even against the Pacers, they had Rick Smith, Antonio Davis, and Dale Davis. They took him to 7 games. And even though Reggie Miller says we were the better team, I don't think you were, Reggie, with all due respect. But you were a good team, but you gave them problems. So Robinson and Duncan there, I think, would have given them some problems. It could have gone either way. And Houston and the Rockets with Olajuwon in 94-95, they would have trouble containing Hakeem the Dream. But again, it's all speculation now, but it's a crying shame if you think about it. And we thought about it back then. But, you know, fast forwarding 22 years later, 21 years later, not going a chance for a four-peat, it's really horrible. And we got on Kawhi Leonard for leaving Toronto and not defending his title. These guys were out of three-peat going for four, and the owner and the GM crushed the team. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, bring up Kawhi. And, you know, interesting situation with the Raptors and how they're going to be able to defend this right now without Kawhi and in these unique circumstances. So as you stated, it's hard to bet against Michael Jordan. That Spurs team was really good. And then I guess the next year was Shaq and Kobe, right? It began,
correct,
you know, with Phil Jackson. You imagine if, you know, that would have happened, if somehow. But Phil Jackson could have been in two places at once, right? So, you know, it's hard, but that would have been sort of the dream. But the Bulls did get the Lakers, and it was Magic Johnson that they got. So, you know, as far as Jerry Krause is concerned, clearly, you know, he wanted attention. He wanted to be one of the guys, you could see, right? You know, he was always in the room, on the plane. He wanted to be one of the guys, but he wasn't one of the guys. But you got to give him credit for all those role players that he did bring in. And, you know, to me, Pete, it, you know, it hit me personally as well, just watching the growth of the NBA and, you know, going down memory lane. The Seattle series really got to me. That was the one I was like, man, I remember that series so well. And just sort of, you know, a great time in NBA history then. But, you know, we should note, basically, just what Stern, people don't realize, like, Jordan just wasn't a star, but he really did, like, make the NBA. He turned the NBA into what it was. Like, Magic and Larry Bird sort of saved the NBA, but Jordan took it to this, like, whole new level of internationalism. Like, you know, like, the other guys weren't international stars in China and Japan and internationally like Michael Jordan did. He really did change the landscape. And it's the one thing we got to give credit to LeBron James for now. LeBron James has done a great job carrying the NBA. He has. And I'm not even LeBron's biggest fan. But as far as being an ambassador for the league, being the face of the league, success, people idolize him, other players look up to him, etc., I got to give him credit, but what's amazing to me is, I don't know if you saw the ESPN poll, but it was a fan poll only. Yet, you know, people used to, it was only like, you know, whatever. People for the last few years have been, LeBron's better than Jordan. And, you know, it's gotten me angry and stuff. Yet people watch this And suddenly everyone's like, no, all right. Jordan's better. It is what it is. Jordan's the best. Yet there was a poll of fans, and it was like 100 questions. Whose shoe is cooler? Who looks cooler? Whose, like, fashion do you like better? Who would you rather play with? Who do you want to take the last shot? And there was even a question, who's done more off the basketball court for the community? And they said, Michael Jordan. I'm like, come on, guys. Like, it almost seems like LeBron bashing is in vogue this week, Pete. Everyone's, like, stepping out of the woodwork and taking shots at Bron. And I like Bron's take. He's not biting. He's not, like, taking the bait. And I like what he said. He goes, you know what? My game would have meshed with Jordan very well. He goes, I could have played with that guy. I believe him, too. Imagine Jordan, LeBron on the same freaking team.
Listen, there's no question, and I've been critical of LeBron James over the years, and somewhat for what he's done on the court or lack thereof, but I think one of the reasons is because people keep saying that LeBron's the greatest of all time, and they have no idea who Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, and Michael Jordan were. But to say that LeBron James is not the ambassador of the NBA and is not the most high-profile player is ridiculous. LeBron has been tremendous off the court. He's had no issues at all in the social media, 24/7 coverage, you know, smartphones with cameras. LeBron never gets in trouble. He's a tremendous, tremendous human being. Look what he's done for all the kids in Akron and the schools and everything he continues to do. And, you know, like you mentioned it, it was Bird and Magic in the 80s, and then Jordan took over. And then I think then you had Kobe and Shaq going three-peat, kind of holding the NBA. And then LeBron came in and took over. Those are the guys. And with all due respect to Tim Duncan, who won 5 championships, he didn't have that personality where he was the face of the NBA. It's LeBron James. And I'm curious to see who's going to be the next guy. I think Durant tried a little bit, but I think his image took a hit when he left OKC and joined that 73-19. I think Curry is up there, but there's something missing. Is it going to be Giannis now? But he needs to win, right, to get to that level. So LeBron is still the guy, and I think he's been a tremendous ambassador for the NBA.
We've got a couple of minutes left here with Pete Yiannopoulos. And, you know, the one thing that I thought about the documentary at the end, and, you know, it was marvelously done. They ended it with the Pearl Jam song that people were freaking out about. But I would have liked just sort of this, you know, I know it might be cheesy, but the where are they now? You know, where's that security guard that beat Jordan and did the shrug? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, just, you know, like, is he sitting? Where is he? Is he alive? Where is he? Is he, you know, just the behind the scenes sort of stories. I thought it was a great story when we found out about the other security guy, the head security guy that became like a father figure for Jordan was great. But there's outtakes. And here's some of the outtakes. Here's some smack talk, Pete. This is stuff that no one's heard. So in 1987, Jordan dunked over 6'1" guard John Stockton, a fan in Utah that many to believe at the time was Larry Miller, former owner, screamed something to the effect of "Pick on someone your own size." So Jordan dunked on 6'11" Mel Turpin. He proceeded to ask his heckler if that was big enough for him.
Come fly with me.
Early in his career, NBA guard Steve Smith told a reporter that he felt good about defending Jordan. When the game started and Jordan made his first basket, he said 38. After the next one, he said 36. He was counting backwards from 40, the total that he scored in the game.
This dude.
Here's another one that I actually knew. And Muggsy Bogues actually was very upset about it. And in fact, so much that Bogues believes the moment ruined his career. During the 1995 playoffs, the Bulls led the Charlotte Hornets by one point late in the game. While guarding 5'3" Muggsy Bogues, he backed off and infamously declared, "Just shoot the ball, you effing midget." Muggsy Bogues Bagley missed. According to former Bull assistant Johnny Bock, who was then coaching in Charlotte, Bogues believes the moment ruined his career. You know, there was a great one too, and I didn't know this about this, was that Byron Russell, of all guys that he hit the shot on, did you catch that in the documentary when they said Jordan was at, I don't know where it was not at an all-star game, or it might have been, so basically Jordan was retired, I think it was the all-star game. and Jordan was retired. Basically, the story is Jordan's retired at the time, and he sees, like, Karl Malone and Stockton and stuff. And Jordan's like, yo, what's up, guys? And Byron Russell is there. Mm-hmm. And Byron Russell says to Jordan, he goes, man, he goes, you retired because you knew you couldn't score on me, right? And Byron Russell starts talking smack to him. Jordan was retired, comes back, and the rest is history, Pete.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing.
He gets revenge on everybody, this guy.
You know, we all want an episode 11 or 12, or we want another part of this Last Man, but it's so good because we want so much more, and that's why it's so great, and that's what we said at the beginning of
the
podcast.
Because we don't want to let go of the past either. It's like brings back great memories of our life. It's like, wow, like just that whole, you know. And, you know, we're fortunate we got the Raptors run. Listen, we've got a couple minutes left, and I appreciate your time as always. We're catering with Pete Annapolis. So, I don't know. It seems, you know, Adam Silver just said today, he just basically told the players, get back to your home cities by June 1st and start practicing. It seems, though, that the NBA is going to try to pull this off. I think Orlando will end up being the place for various reasons. It makes a lot of sense. They can sort of put themselves in a bubble, not a full quarantine, but a bubble at least. Constant testing, quarantine, bubble. It's not the end of the world for the players to live at Disney World for 5 weeks, 6 weeks. And some teams will be eliminated quickly anyways. And, you know, it seems like the wheels are sort of in motion for this right now, Pete. And thing is, too, ESPN owns Disney, right? Or Disney owns ESPN, et cetera, whatever. And same corporation, ABC, Disney. So the thing is, ESPN are rights holders. They have television production facilities there already. They have basketball and practice facilities there already. Anybody that's seen a sports complex there knows, you know, they've got ESPN used to do college football and, you know, like all-star stuff. And they got all kinds of facilities there. They own it. And there's an incentive for ESPN and everything. It seems, you know, I think Orlando's going to be the place. What are you hearing, Pete?
No, I think that there's no question about it that logistically and operationally that makes the most sense in the city of Orlando and Disney. I think they can put those players in the hotels, keep them in that bubble, as you just mentioned. And I think that having all those players in a hot climate, I think will alleviate some of the concerns. I think that the players and the league will happen. I think there will be playoffs in basketball. I think that they're doing everything possible to adhere to the recommendations on health and safety and making sure none of the players get infected or test positive during this situation where they're going to be in that bubble. I think if they could assure that or do the best that they can, I think that they'll be able to get those games and the players will be there. You'll have that training camp. And I think then let's go. Playoffs will happen. You won't have to have all these games spread out. You're going to have multiple games per day. And I think people are starving right now for sports. I think right now we didn't have an NCAA college basketball tournament this year, but you're going to get one, but it's going to be the NBA. Neutral court. Everybody's going to play in one arena, and may the best team win. And I think you're talking about legacies on the line. Can you imagine if LeBron James wins a title with the Lakers and now he gets to four and
with
three different teams? What
especially the summer
like?
Of the Last Dance, exactly. That with another team, it's just, you're right. Can Kawhi actually leave one team, go to another team and win one, which would just be next level epicness as well. And I don't think Kawhi gets talked about. Like, it's hard to say Kawhi greatest of all time, but you know what I mean? He's sort of there in a sense, but he needs just a few more accomplishments, and I don't want him to get it, at least not now. And what about our Raptors, right? People are going to write the Raptors off, but I'm telling you, I have a lot of confidence. We got a minute and a half here, Pete, but if any coach can put something together in a weird situation like this and adapt, and the Raptors were not a three-point shooting team. You know, we're not like a hot and cold. It's like Milwaukee. Yeah, you guys better hope you hit your threes, guys. You haven't played in 4 months, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, we play defense. We play fundamentals. And I'll tell you what, the Raptors will be as healthy as they've been all freaking year. And if we don't play, then we never got to defend the title for real then, right? Because Gasol will be gone. Hell, Van Fleet could be gone for all we know. I don't think he will be, Pete. But I like the Raptors' chances, bro. I'm not scared of anybody. I mean that.
I spoke to an assistant coach in the NBA last night, and we're talking about a lot of things in NBA, and we talked about the Raptors, and I told him that if Gasol and Ibaka, if Nick Nurse doesn't put them in together in game 4 against Philadelphia down 2-1, There's no Raptors parade. There's no championship. And he said Nick Nurse is a genius. He's one of the best coaches in the NBA. And he's not afraid to innovate and think out of the box. And defensively, what he did last year, the teams that he played against, the Raptors, Nick Nurse, they have a great chance to defend their title. But when we're talking about legacies, this could be the last year that Giannis plays in Milwaukee, or he's got one more year after, then he'll be gone. Giannis has got to get to the finals. They got to win one, or else it's see you later for Giannis in Milwaukee. And is Giannis going to be considered one of the great players? He's got to start winning, because that's 24 years old, 25.
Pressure's on.
The pressure's on. So there's so many storylines.
We got to get out of here, PP, unfortunately. I hope we do, too. It's always a pleasure talking hoops with you. And for all we know, man, Giannis might be a member of the Toronto Raptors. That's a real possibility as well down the road. But we'll talk next week. It's always a pleasure, man. Thank you for the time, bro. Thank you. Get on a grid.
Are you ready for the nation's first and only free 24-hour network dedicated to you, the betting and fantasy sports enthusiast? SportsGrid will provide you with real-time content, statistics, and gaming intelligence unlike anything you've ever seen before. Located both in the heart of New York City and inside the FanDuel Sportsbook at the Meadowlands, SportsGrid is live 18 hours a day, here to serve you, the fanatic. This is SportsGrid. Get on the grid.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.